Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Jones!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. Now look back at the second day's play in the Liverpool Victoria Insurance Test Series between England and New Zealand, and a much better day, of course, this one for England after the first day. Actually, I found the first day quite turgid viewing, but the second day was interesting cricket. Always is, isn't it, when the bowlers are on top. The ball did a little bit more today. England, in the end, scrambled to 111 for two. Well, I say scrambled. They actually played pretty well in the last sort of hour or so. And they managed to sort of trim New Zealand's hopes to under 400. I thought at one point they might have got them to 330 or something, but that last pair played pretty well. And an extraordinary second day for Devon Conway as well, to get 200 on your first ever test innings. I mean, it's an incredible achievement, but England are fighting hard.
Yeah, they've had a much better second day than first day. Listening to Mark Wood this morning saying about Devon Conway, well, I hope I hope he's a bit tired this morning, or at least a bit tireder than we are. Which suggested that it could be a sort of tough day ahead for England's bowlers, because that first day had taken a bit out of them. But Conway was just back for more. Mind you, so was Mark Wood, who was excellent today. I mean, he was England's standout bowler on the second day. And Conway, well, how to get him out? You run him out. He was the last man out. He nearly carried his bat. It was a really tight decision for the third umpire, the TV umpire, Richard Illingworth. It was one of those that some umpires, I think, would have they've gone for the really cautious approach and said not out. I think it was out. Were the frames there to sort of conclusively prove it? Probably. Anyway, he sent him on his way, and that was it. Conway didn't carry his bat, but 200 not out on debut at Lords. I mean, fantastic.
Well, 200 out.
Well, sorry, 200. Yeah, 200 out. Yeah, well, yeah.
200 not dismissed by a bowler.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, no bowler defeated him. 200 run out of 378. It's phenomenal. And I think one of the features of his innings was that, normally when a batsman gets 200, there are some dicey moments on the way, or he's dropped a couple of times or whatever. But it's hard. I mean, he was beaten a few times, but there weren't many moments in the whole innings where you thought he was going to be dismissed.
I agree.
It was a really...
I completely agree. It backs up what we were saying yesterday, that he just sort of... He didn't seem to get tired or bored, certainly not. And he never sort of got out of his little bubble. And yet he played quite a kind of, enjoyable watching innings. It was quite fluent, wasn't it? There were some lovely drives today and yesterday. So it wasn't like a sort of an Alistair Cook kind of innings, which can be a bit crab-like. It was actually quite aesthetically pleasing. Yeah. It stole my thunder slightly, or ruined my story, because I wanted to tell you, or test you out, actually, to see if you knew what the origin of carrying your bat is. Because he would have carried his bat if he'd been knocked out, obviously, at the end.
Well,
do you know the origin of that term?
Well, go on anyway.
Or do you?
No.
No, I thought as much. Well, it goes back to the days when you only had one or two bats per team in the kind of 17 or 1800s. And so if you were out, you left your bat at the wicket for the next person. So I know, you know, probably some schools and even maybe village teams still do this. But so you left your bat at the crease if you were out and walked off, you know, just without the bat. And obviously, if you were not out, if you're the last man not out, you got to carry the bat off at the end. And that's the origin of carry the bat. And it used to apply to anyone who was not out at the end. But over time, it's become just refers to a man who batted from the start and carries his bat off at the end because he's not out.
Well, it's nice to learn something new. I didn't know that, but good story, Oz. Also, good story today. Neil Wagner came out at number 11 and looked. Yeah. I mean, looked almost as good as anyone. I mean, two or three of the shots he played. I mean, he played one glorious back foot cover drive off Mark Wood, who, you know, was steaming in, picked up three wickets today. Delightful from Wagner. And the weird thing was, normally, you know, when you got a bloke at one end approaching 200, you sort of bat for him, don't you? You try to sort of coax him and do your best. And but there was none of that from Wagner. He came out and played his shots. He belted one over. He belted Stuart Broad back over his head over long off for six. A stage where you thought, hold on, you know, bat for Conway, see if you can get him up to 200. But he was playing his shots, and Wagner didn't really look like being out either. It was sort of delightful, free flowing batting from New Zealand's number 11. In sort of in a way, in contrast to most of their innings, you talk about yesterday being sort of a hard working day for, I think, you know, for spectators. It was great to be here, and you know, the spectators back in Lords, but it was a hard working day, and Wagner actually just played with that freedom that we hadn't seen in the game so far. And of course, when England batted, I mean, that was hard work as well. It's taken them 43 overs to score 111. Root was becalmed for a long time, really, really, really digging in there because he, you know, sensed the difficulty England were in at 18 for two. Are they right back in this game? Well, I think they feel as if they're more in the game than they were after the first day. What are we looking at in terms of the flow of the match? Yoza, and your graphic, your who's winning graphic.
Well, if you're watching in video, you can see this. Obviously, if you're listening on the podcast, you can't, but I'll try and explain it. So this graphic shows a percentage chance of each team winning. And after the first day, the New Zealanders were up to 45% chance of winning. England were down, right down at 12. And the draw was looking reasonably likely as well. And now we've seen today quite a bit of fluctuation. New Zealand marginally ahead at the end of the day, sort of 35%, 36% chance of winning. But England have fought back well. And that's from the depths of 10% chance for England in kind of early in the day when Devon Conway and Henry Nicholls were going so well. And there was no hope of England getting a wicket, really. And the New Zealanders were really cock-a-hoop and like 50% chance of winning. But then that spell from Mark Wood, which you can see here, this blue line, England suddenly getting some hope with those three quick wickets and a couple for Ollie Robinson as well, that really reduced New Zealand's aspirations. And I was so pleased for Mark Wood that, you know, after all that effort yesterday, we gave him the Liverpool Victoria Insurance In With Heart Award for his gutsy effort with the ball. No wickets yesterday, three today, totally deserved them. And in fact, he wasn't as quick as yesterday, funnily enough. It just shows that it's not always pace that delivers. But then England also fighting back with the bat as well after those two early losses. So it's almost par now. Both teams level on about 25% chance of winning. And the most likely outcome at this stage is the draw, which has gone up to about 40% chance. And so that's what the graphic reveals today.
Yeah, and yet we know that if a test match goes the full 5 days and there isn't much weather involvement, these days, generally speaking, we don't have many draws in Test match cricket. I mean, there were those two Test matches that West Indies played against Sri Lanka earlier this year in the Caribbean, where the pitches tend to be quite dour, quite flat, and they were two sort of quite big draws in the sense that, you know, it was, as you got into the fifth day, it looked pretty obvious it was going to be a draw, and it turned out that way. But generally speaking, we don't have a lot of draws without much weather intervention. So you still think the draws sort of right up there at the moment, ahead of New Zealand or England? I mean, see,
I don't know, actually. I think it's an interesting one. 3 days to go, a lot can happen. The pitch starting to just do a bit, isn't it? It's sort of a little bit of bounce, a little bit of movement. Root had his share of luck, play and miss a few times. Burns never looks entirely secure. Obviously, England have a longish tail as well, so you want these two to carry on for a fair bit tomorrow. I'm backing somebody in the England side to get close to 100. But then, of course, it'll all be down to how New Zealand bat in the second innings. And so, yeah, there's a lot of different permutations possible. You know, I used to be a coffee addict. Couldn't function without two double-strength lattes in the morning and another to follow, especially if I was going to the gym or on a cycle. It played havoc with my nervous system. Since I've discovered Mission Teas, that's all changed. I feel energised, but not hyperactive. Mission was founded by Tom Whittle on a 9-month ride through South America. His experience was transformed by the amazing properties of Argentinian teas based around the herbs yerba mate and matcha, renowned for their slow release of energy, and rooibos, famous for its anti-inflammatory effects. Mission now produce a range of herbal teas specially designed for hydration, energy boosts, relaxation, and even sleep. Numerous GB sports stars swear by them, including a number of the England cricket team and some famous footballers too. Mission teas are not only genuinely beneficial, but they're actually delicious and don't leave you with stale coffee breath or constantly needing the toilet. Honestly, I feel totally upbeat, whether in the gym, coaching the kids, or recording this podcast, and I'm sleeping better as well. I highly recommend you try some. Mission are offering listeners of this podcast 20% off your first order if you go to missionuk.com and type in the code CRICKETER20, all one word, at checkout. So that's missionuk.com. Use the code CRICKETER20 and enjoy. A couple of sort of talking points. I like the way Tim Southee took that wicket of Zach Crawley, which they talked about a little bit on TV. He bowled him a few outswingers from close to the stumps, and then he went a bit wider and bowled him one from wider of the crease, which he was drawn into driving at. And why is that effective? It's because when you bowl from close to the stumps, the outswinger, and try and swing it away from the right-hander, he can leave the ball because he can see the direction that the swing is going in. But if the bowler goes wider of the crease, it starts out as if it's going to angle in because he's come from wider of the crease. So it looks as if he's trying to bowl an in-swinger or he's aiming to get from a wider angle the ball closer to the stumps or at the stumps. So it's much harder to leave that ball. And it's almost an optical illusion for the batsman. They sort of think, this is a different ball. I can have a drive of it. And actually it sort of hangs out there wide and still swings away, even though from the angle it looks if it would swing in. So it was a clever bit of bowling that by a real swing artist. And one is not quite as good as Jimmy Anderson, but, you know, he's a clever bowler, Tim Southee, and Zach Crawley will learn a lesson there. He fell for that little old trick that you'd see in club cricket. I was going to just talk a little bit about Joe Root's batting as well, a miniature bat here. And he's changed his method. And I was talking to him about this when we were doing the filming with him for the World Cup documentary a couple of weeks ago, actually. He's changed his trigger movement slightly, so he goes back and across a bit more now, does another tap with the bat just before the bowler bowls to get him in sort of a bit of rhythm. And also, I don't know if you noticed, but he twirls the bat quite a lot, just in between bat taps, just before sort of settling into his stance. He does a lot of this twirling. And Kane Williamson does that as well. And he says, Kane Williamson, that it's all about feel, to make sure you're not gripping the bat too tightly, because, you know, using the wrists and using the hands to steer the ball into gaps is very important. So actually just twirling the bat in your hands gives you that feeling of lightness of grip, of lightness of touch. And Root, a big mate of Kane Williamson, has obviously borrowed that. So it's interesting how batsmen sort of pick up these little mannerisms and try and are constantly trying to improve.
Great bat twiddler was Alex Stewart.
Yeah,
he used to love flicking the bat in his hands. And Root played well today. Really solid. At the close, he's 42 not out. Rory Burns had some good fortune early on. There was an LBW shout, which if the umpire had given it out, it's Michael Gough, and he's such a good umpire, Michael Gough. He gets so much right. And this was umpire's call for clipping leg stump. He thought, well, favour of the batsman, really, or benefit the doubt to the batsman, might have been missing leg stump. He gave him not out. If he'd given him out, then Burns had reviewed it, then Burns would have been on his way. That was early on. Burns gradually got into his work. There was an LBW shout as well where he left it, and New Zealand everyone was up for it. And again, another one from Michael Gough, it was too high. So that was absolutely fair enough. How did you feel Burns went today? I mean, he's sort of back in the side, isn't he? Because he was dropped in the winter, back in the side. I mean, clearly, England, they want Rory Burns at the top of the order. He is their preferred option, and he's battled through to the close of play. But it's funny, isn't it? I mean, it's games of such fine margins. Another umpire, another day would have given that LBW out, and Burns would have been dispatched like Sibley early on.
Yeah. They don't tend to review much with Michael Gough, do they? Because they're so of how good he is that they know, if he gets it not out, it'll be not out. So they don't tend to try a review. I mean, Burns is funny. He looks vulnerable to me. I mean, I thought Southey bowled really well to him, trying to swing it in and cut the odd one across. And he plays slightly across the ball. He gets his front pad too far over, and he looks a bit of an LBW victim. And also, I know that when he goes out to the Ashes in Australia, they're going to bounce the hell out of him because he goes for the pull and the hook and he doesn't always look in control. So I'm not entirely sure about him, but I think what England will do is they'll see which one of Burns and Sibley, and hopefully both of them, have a good summer, but they'll want one of them to be the sort of number one batsman. And if Sibley struggles for some reason, they're not going to drop Burns as well. They'll try and find at least one of them that has a permanence, and hopefully both. So, he did pretty well, Rory Burns, and with his method. I'll just bring up one other little talking of Burns, and that was the way that Neil Wagner bowled to him. Now, I've got the field shield here just to demonstrate the unusual field setting that Wagner had towards the end of the day when he tried the left arm over orthodox method. Then he went round the wicket and tried the bouncer method, and it's quite an amazing field. Because he had most of his men behind the wicket, especially on the leg side. He had a short leg and a mid wicket, which I've just dropped off the board, and a deep square leg in front of square, and then two men catching behind square, a sort of leg slip, a sort of deep leg slip, and a long leg. So sort of one, two, three, four, five men in the kind of leg trap area, but of course only two can be behind square on the leg side, and then the other men sort of sprinkled on the offside. But it's an amazingly difficult field to bowl to, I think, with all these men on the leg side to the left-hander. And he conceded a few runs and in the end gave up. But it was an interesting passage of play, I thought.
Well, that's one of Wagner's ways of operating, isn't it? To bang the ball in, flog the ball into the pitch. And he's taken so many wickets that way, a high percentage of his wickets, or higher percentage of his wickets have been with a short ball, and he's 35 years of age. It takes a lot of energy to bowl that way. You know that yourself from trying to bowl short. It takes a lot out of you, and yet Wagner, it's worked for him. It didn't work for him today. Burns, I mean, there's not much pace in this pitch, is there? There's not a huge amount of bounce. I mean, sometimes you can sort of skid it through, and that helps you. Slight misjudgment, top edge, whatever. And also, as well, I suppose it's the unorthodox nature. Not many bowlers do this. So not many batters actually see this in operation. So, you have to come up with a very specific plan for Neil Wagner. I mean, people have seen it now, so they know what he's about, don't they? And they know what the challenge is. And Burns coped with it pretty well. It felt as though he's sort of flogging it, what's that phrase, flogging a dead horse a bit today, Wagner. It just did not work for him. But it worked for him on a similar sort of surface in Mount Maunganui when England played in New Zealand last time round. He picked up five for in the last innings, and he was the man responsible for New Zealand winning on that final day. So it has worked against England on a pitch like this. The one wicket, that sort of, the one genuine sort of short ball wicket today was Mark Wood getting rid of Nicholls, and that was that was a top edge down towards the fine leg boundary, and Robinson taking the catch. Robinson did get Robinson got Jameson out with a short ball. That was a top edge, deep square leg. Yeah. But the Wood one, what do you think as a quick bowler, the three wickets the Wood took today? Do you think the short ball wicket would have given him most pleasure, banging the ball in, taking on the hook and top edge towards fine leg, or
I think the one that swung. I think the one that swung and was called a slip actually in a way, because although
that was Watling,
a bouncer needs to be well directed, it's more about strength. Whereas the caught slip with an outswinger on a perfect length is more about skill. So I think I'd get more satisfaction from the beautiful outswinger, which he doesn't produce that many of actually, and caught slip, rather than the bouncer caught on the deep. But the bouncer caught on the deep was a good turning point for England, because they weren't looking very wicket happy generally, or wicket optimistic, and suddenly he changed it with that top edge, and it was a good bit of bowling, some stuff outside off stump to get the batsman forward, and then sort of surprise him with that skiddy bouncer, which wasn't getting up that much, and the batsman was a bit tucked up, and in the end got the top edge. So it was a good bit of cricket from Wood, and that's what he's there for, isn't it, to sort of make something happen when everything's not going their way and it's looking a bit dead. And that really turned the game for England, and they're very much back in it now.
Yeah, and you're right. And Wood, one of the things about Mark Wood's bowling is that he does roar and he does bowl with pace, but I think he sometimes gets frustrated at his lack of wickets. And actually today, that type of bowling, that sort of shock force almost, he did haul England back into the game. And he has, bowled really well. He bowled quickly in the West Indies, for example. He bowled well in South Africa as well. But I just wonder whether that spell today, he'll have a sort of have a special place for him, because he talked about it before the start of play today, about, if we can get some wickets, we'll be right back in the game. And you think, well, hold on, it's 250 for three. The pitch looks pretty flat. You can see New Zealand getting 450, but actually Wood made it happen. Mm. And that short ball got England going, and then he got Watling, as we mentioned, caught it slip, the ball you're talking about, and then Santner in at number eight, rather tame dismissal, poking the ball to mid-off. But even that might have been to do with Wood's pace, because he was right back, right back in his crease because of Wood's extra pace, and he rather poked it out towards mid-off. So you look at Wood, 27 overs, 8 maidens, 3 for 81. They're not figures that... they're solid figures, but they're not sort of special figures. No, but the point I'm making is a really significant spell and a huge boost for his confidence as well.
And he's taken his wickets at 27, 3 for 81. So that's perfectly respectable on that pitch, actually. Now, tell me, life in the TMS box, a little bit different, I suppose. A bit more separation, no cake. What's the story?
No, we haven't had any cake yet. Probably can't get through the various...
Well, it's all zoned off, isn't it? You can't... when I came yesterday, actually, you have to go into the gate that's miles away from your seat, and you have to go back out the same way. You can't kind of sneak in through the Grace Gates or the East Gate or anything. You have to walk virtually all around the ground. And I always hate that bit of Lord's at the end, at the Wellington Road end, which is just a brick wall. It looks like a prison. I once met a lady who was a French lady who lived in the kind of St John's Wood area, and she said, "What is that? What is that behind that prison wall?" And I said, "It's a cricket ground, it's the most awful sort of carbuncle, really, which sort of totally hides the beauty and the history that's hidden within." I don't know if you've seen also the special Lord's Wall, the Father Time Wall, which commemorates a lot of amazing performances at Lord's over the 200 years or so that it's been there. And people sponsor a tile, and then it goes up on this Father Time Wall, which is behind the new stand, sort of at the west side of the ground. It's really good. You should go and have a look at it tomorrow, and I'll meet you there, maybe, because I'll be there. So We'll have a look at the Father Time Wall and pick out a... If we're allowed to mix, are we? I don't know. I'm not allowed in the media centre. Maybe you're not allowed out.
I don't know what the regulations are. It's funny, you know, it's so different from last year where... Yeah, we were staying on the grounds at Old Trafford and the Aegeus Bowl. It does feel different this year. You are allowed to go home at the end of the day's play. You don't have to sleep near the commentary box as we did last year. But you know, there's still regulations in place. Mask wearing is encouraged. You know, in the media centre, when you go down for your lunch or whatever, and you know, you're not encouraged to move around the ground. But it does feel a far more normal experience this time round. We've still got the screens between commentators, but we're sitting a bit closer to the commentator. It feels, you know, you're summarising your scorer this year than we were last year. So it's gradually getting back to normal. Of course, next week the Edgbaston Test match, you know, much bigger crowds. You know, around about 15,000 allowed per day.
Wow.
So that will be
noisy, isn't it? Imagine all
Edgbaston
faithful who've been denied the chance of shouting and screaming for a year. God, they're going to be going for it.
Yeah, and it's not in the Holly stand. It's normally pretty raucous anyway. So yeah, there will be. I mean, Lords, it's felt a very sort of genteel atmosphere over the last couple of days. 6,500 people. The sun has shone. The cricket has been attritional, really, rather than dramatic. I wouldn't say it's been a thrilling first couple of days. I mean, it's something that Devon Conway will remember forever. And what was really nice today, actually, was when he got his double 100 with a top edge six. Actually, he's played so in such a measured way, but he actually went to his 100 with a six over fine leg that was off the top edge. Everyone in the ground, just about, I looked all around the ground, everyone was standing up and applauding. And that real sort of sense of appreciation for an overseas batter who's come here on debut and produced something really special. And that was a lovely moment. He's South African, New Zealander, he must have sort of looked around and thought, well, this is something really special. I suppose if there'd been 25,000 people in the ground, it would have been even more special. But there was something really nice about you could almost pick out every single person in the ground who was standing up and applauding you. Really lovely feeling for him.
And how many people have made more than 200 on Test match debut? You probably know that, do you?
Not off the top of my head, but the highest score on debut is
R.E. Foster, 287.
Yeah, Tip Foster, 287. But he was knocking quite a few. He's well into the top 10 now of higher scores on debut. I think what 200. I think there were five or six others who have made 200 on debut. Of course, the most recent was the West Indian batsman, Carl Mayers, who made that double 100 against Bangladesh and won that test match in thrilling fashion. So
His first innings, though, I don't think, was it? I think it was his second innings.
No, but on his debut.
It wasn't his actual debut innings.
No, it wasn't. No. But, I mean, brilliant for Conway today. Good from Wood, solid from Burns and Root. And 3 days to go. You've got the draw at the top of the list on your winning.
Let's hope not, eh? Unless it's one of those gripping ones which goes to the last over or something.
We'll accept that. I think the game probably needs to go up a gear.
I don't think it's going to be a draw. I just don't. I don't think modern players, I don't think so. I think the pitch will start doing things. There are so many good bowlers playing as well.
Yeah, well, in which case, I think New Zealand have got more of a chance than England. Obviously, if England have a really good batting day tomorrow and get up around New Zealand's score, they can put some pressure on them. What they haven't got, though, and what neither side's got, really, is a sort of top-class spinner. We could talk about India coming later in the summer. I mean, if India were playing in this match, I think I'd really fancy them from this position, because I've got a feeling the ball's going to turn as the game goes on. One or two have gone quite sharply. It's only one or two, but they have. You know, there was one that Santa bowled to Root that really ripped past his outside edge. So you just think, you know, if we do get some decent weather over the next few days, and actually there's some talk about some rain around tomorrow, which could just halt the progress of the game. But you think, you know, by the fifth day, if England are batting last, if they were facing Ravichandran Ashwin, say, and one or two other of the Indian spinners, then it could be a real challenge for them. But England have got Root, New Zealand have got Santa, who's never taken a fifer, so that although he did help England with that he did help New Zealand beat England in that match in Mount Maunganui. You feel they might, there's going to be something for him. Have they got the bowlers to, either side got the bowlers to really exploit the conditions? England's problem, of course, is that they had to, you know, they didn't have a balance to their side, and they said it was really difficult to pick the team. And you can understand that. You know, you actually feel some sympathy for them, because it wasn't easy to come up with the 11 they've come up with for this game. There were lots of tough decisions to make. And New Zealand have got their spinner in Santner, but he's not the most threatening. He's not of the highest class. So perhaps this pitch is not going to have the bowlers it deserves at the back end of the game, if you understand what I mean. So we might not see what this pitch is really capable of. But anyway, there's a bit there for the bowlers, and there's a bit there for everyone, really. Mm. Although it's quite hard work for the batters out there. But yeah, what you hope from here is that we get some drama, really, some real. You know, the game needs to go up a level. Whether it will or not, or whether it will just peter, it could peter out.
Don't say that. It's not going to peter out. It's going to be riveting. So let's stick with that prediction. And we'll be back tomorrow to review the third day's play. I think it's going to be, as you say, a little bit weather interrupted, but hopefully not too much. And they can get the play back on as soon as the rain stops, if it falls. And as I say, we'll be back tomorrow with the third day's review of this Liverpool Victoria Insurance Test Series between England and New Zealand. So join us then. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.